I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about cars, cars, and more cars. The auto shows are upon us, so we're going to discuss what's hot and what's not in the automotive world, and maybe explore what are the best car options for you. My guest will be WFYI's own automotive guru, Casey Williams. To join the conversation and ask your car question, please call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about cars today on No Limits, and it'll be the kind of show, if you have a question about cars, not just, you know, if you're a car buff, obviously this is show for you, but if you're also getting ready to buy a car or thinking about what might be the best kind of vehicle for your lifestyle, this also would be the show for you to call in or send us an email. And if you want to do that or connect with us via social media, if you want to do that, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guest is part of the family here. He is WFYI's car guy, Casey Williams. Casey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here, and glad we could finally work it out.
It's good to have you here. So you got some news for us. You just came back from Detroit, where, you know, I've heard they have a couple of cars.
They have a couple of cars, yeah.
Okay. So what did you find while you were up there?
So I was there on Sunday evening for some previews, and then all day Monday for press days. Actually opens to the public this weekend, so we're getting a little bit ahead of it, I think, on the news, and I think that's great. But it's the trends that kind of been going on, but still just really advancing. Crossovers are still very, very big. In fact, the subcompact crossover segment is the fastest growing segment right now.
So, probably ought to define for people who don't speak car what a crossover is.
Well, crossover is essentially, it looks like an SUV, but it's based on a car platform. Mm-hmm. So the underpinnings, the powertrains are all car-based. Well, it has a big body like an SUV. So there's no full frame underneath of it like an old truck-based SUV might have. Okay. And the advantage is they get better fuel economy than if you have a full frame and that weight mm-hmm. as part of that. And they drive like cars and handle like cars, and people tend to like them. And there's very little fuel economy penalty, too, even compared to a car. So crossovers were big. A couple of sedans, the Toyota Camry was all new. Lexus LS500 was all new. We can talk about those in just a second. And the Honda Odyssey was there, on top of some updates to the Ford F-150. So talk about crossovers, Volkswagen had the new Tiguan. It's their compact crossover. They have a stretch version now with three rows of seats. So it's a little more family-friendly, or growing family, where the old one was just a little bit too small for having kids. Chevrolet had General Motors had two brand-new crossovers, the 2018 Chevrolet Traverse, and that's their three-row, long-wheelbase crossover. Again, very family-friendly. You get 4G Wi-Fi in it. It's got a hands-free liftgate, surround vision camera. So again, if you've got, you know, 2 to 4 kids, it's an ideal vehicle for that. And then a little bit smaller, you know, following up on the Chevy Equinox that was unveiled this fall, is the new GMC Terrain. That's their compact crossover. And it's a lot more stylish, it's a lot more streamlined than the old kind of boxy version. And the big news is they're going to offer a 1.6-liter turbo diesel in it. I've had many people ask if they're ever going to offer a diesel in the compact crossovers, and they are going to finally do that. And the nice thing is it gives you nice performance, gets you top fuel economy. They'll announce that later, but we're expecting mid-30s on the highway with a diesel. And then, you know, the Nissan Rogue has been very popular for Nissan. It outsells the Altima sedan now, so it's their most popular model. And they have a Rogue Sport coming out. It's basically a renamed version of one of the European crossovers that they're bringing over here. And there was some fun eye candy. Had the Audi Q8 concept, which is a four-place large crossover. Again, it's kind of a waste of space, but But for four people, it's just absolutely divine luxury inside of the car. Infiniti's new QX50 concept, just very lightly disguised, very sporty vehicle. That'll be out very soon. Jeep announced, you know, on the SUV front, and these really are probably going to be full-frame SUVs, the new Wagoneer, a high-end luxury Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer. And they also announced that those will be built in their assembly plant in Michigan, in Detroit. And then Ford's big announcement is a brand-new Ranger pickup truck coming in 2019. The Bronco will be returning in 2020. And then they also announced a hands-free autonomous vehicle for 2021. And they were very clear that would be a high-volume autonomous vehicle. So a lot of news on that front. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're looking at cars, you know, the Camry has always been a good car. It's the best-selling car in the United States. But I think most people say it's just a little bit boring, a little bit conservative, and that's going to go away. The exterior is very dramatic, very exciting. The interior is more driver-focused, very high-tech looking. And I think people who liked the Camry before will still like it, but I think it's going to appeal to a lot wider audience. And then the new Lexus 2018 Lexus LS500, which is their big flagship sedan. And that car was actually unveiled in Detroit, you know, for the 1990 model year, and they actually unveiled that car there. And at the time, they only sold that model in the United States, and now it's sold globally. So they're going to get rid of the V8. It's going to have a turbocharged six-cylinder engine, but it's still going to have 415 horsepower, and you can run 0-60 about 4.5 seconds. So for a very large 4-to-5-passenger car, it's going to be pretty quick.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about cars with WFYI's car guru, Casey Williams, here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email, nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Ron has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Certainly.
Good to hear you again.
Same here.
As an American auto worker, I got to say that I prefer to support American workers. But having said that, my question is about driverless cars. I feel like we've got enough driverless cars on the road anyway.
That's true.
Specifically, how, if you have any idea, how would a driverless car, if you're running down the road at 60 miles an hour, you have traffic behind you, a rabbit jumps out. How does that driverless car know to go ahead and take out the rabbit to avoid a rear-end collision because it slammed on the brakes? And thanks for the answer.
Well, thanks for the call and the question, Ron.
Sure. Bye.
Bye.
Well, those kinds of issues really are, you know, what makes autonomous driving so difficult is to have a computer that can recognize like a human does and react to it like a human might, mm-hmm. and preferably even better than a human, and actually avoid the rabbit in this case, or avoid a human being that's in the road or a bicyclist in the road. And so the cars have to have those logarithms to be able to do those things. And that's really why we don't have them widespread right now. It's really the programming that's understanding it. It's extensive testing. And of course, you know, the automakers will, you know, they got good proving grounds for these vehicles, but they have to go through these different scenarios and test for them and make sure the car can actually do that. And but there are cars today even that have pedestrian avoidance systems that mm-hmm. will go ahead and brake. The Lexus LS500 actually will put the brakes on and steer around a pedestrian if it detects one's path. So it has that choice going as well.
How do they do that? I mean, what sort of system? Is it a modified radar?
Radar. Yeah, it's radar, it's LIDAR, it's cameras.
Okay.
And a combination of all those in some vehicles.
Now, you know, we keep talking about this, and actually we've done shows where people have talked about, you know, the coming advent of driverless cars and how that's going to change everything. In regard to the way we live and all of that, how far away do you think we are from that being a reality?
Well, most of the automakers, especially the luxury automakers, are talking 2020. The Ford, and they were very clear that it's going to be a high-volume model, hands-free, mm-hmm. talking 2021. So they're coming fast. And when we were at the auto show, you know, Bill Ford was speaking, you know, on the convention floor. And he said this technology is coming much faster than we even expected, you know, as executives at the car company, that the programmers are able to do better, the developers are able to get there faster. And they really think, you know, by 2025, it's going to be fairly widespread.
We're talking about cars here on No Limits. Carl, welcome to the program.
The programmers are able to do better, the developers are able to get there faster. And they really think, you know, by 2025, it's going to be fairly widespread.
Carl?
We're talking about cars here.
You got a delay, Carl.
Carl, welcome to the program.
Could you turn off your radio and...
Thank you.
Oh, certainly.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Certainly. Certainly. What's on your mind?
My question is this. As cars are technologically advancing, how easy is it going to be for the Joe Smo like myself to be able to work on these cars? Are they getting so advanced that we'll be able to look good in them, but we won't be able to do anything to help them stay afloat or be able to repair those cars? That's my question.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Carl.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thanks for the question. I think we're very quickly getting beyond that. I mean, being able to work on our own cars anyway, I think that's probably the case today. You know, I just had a battery replaced, and the battery had to be reprogrammed, had to be programmed with the car. And it's like, I couldn't even really get a battery replaced in my car myself. So we're very quickly getting to the point where it is going to take a technician. I mean, they're rolling computers, and they're going to be increasingly electrified, you know, electrical drive systems. And working on it is just going to be difficult.
Yeah, I had an issue where, you know, my keyless entry, the thing, stopped working. And I thought, okay, the battery's dead. And I just stopped at a battery store and got one and found out that I'd completely messed up the thing by that, because they have to be synced or whatever, which means, you know, you can't even operate the key anymore by yourself, which is a challenge. So what do you think were the big takeaways? I mean, what impressed you the most when you were in Detroit and thought, oh wow, that's really, really cool?
I think I actually like some of the concept cars. And I think, again, going along with autonomous driving, the automakers are really rethinking how do we package people in these cars? What are they going to do when the cars are driving themselves? And when you realize that the car's going to drive itself, you know, you can have driver's seats that turn around and face the back, theoretically, and you can have a mobile lounge, you can have different things going on. So Volkswagen had a concept called the ID Buzz concept. And what it looked like was just a modern-day Volkswagen bus, like from the 1950s, just modernized. Mm-hmm. But you think about, you know, that vehicle, it's got lots of space inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the ideal thing for a mobile lounge. You think about the old camper vans. Well, this is kind of a modern-day camper van for the highway going in full blast. And you can have, you know, you can have a flat screen to watch TV. You can have your entertainment system, and the car's doing the driving. You don't worry about it.
Or in theory, take a nap while you're on your way into the office or driving across the country or whatever. Now, there are limits, you know, practical limits to how far these driverless vehicles can go, or you know, points when actually human hands do have to assume control of the vehicle.
Yeah, and I think they're still working out all those protocols, and it comes in steps. You think about, you know, when did automation first start? And it was anti-lock brakes in the late 1970s, early 1980s, and then it was traction control and stability control. So little by little, they've been automated. Electronic throttles come into play, and then the crash avoidance systems, automatic braking. So you have all those systems, and then you had radar cruise control, the adaptive cruise control that automatically adjusts, keeps a safe distance on the highway. So those systems have come into play. And then it was automatic braking using the radar, you know, basically from the cruise control system. And the next step becomes super cruise, where, you know, you sit there, you watch the road, you kind of keep your hands on your knees, but you're really still the driver of the car. And the next step of that would be full autonomy. So it really comes in steps. And on the highway, it's not so difficult because you've got lane markers the cameras can watch. It's very consistent speeds on the highway. When you're going through urban traffic, you got intersections and people walking in and out and cars going slow and people stopping at curbs, it becomes a lot more complicated to do that.
Is it? Are we going to get to the point where it's sort of like the old Knight Rider TV show, where you can switch back and forth from I'm driving the car to the fact that I can hand it over to the automation and you know, let the technology take over?
Yeah, and most automakers have said, you know, and Porsche someday will have an automated car, but what they all keep saying is, look, there are going to be times, basically your morning commute, where you'd rather have the car do it, drink your coffee and listen to some news, but there's going to be the weekends when you'd prefer to drive the car just because, you know, for your own enjoyment. And the most automakers are planning on allowing you to have those options both. If you want to drive the car, you can. And if you want to let the car worry about it, you can. So you think of it kind of like cruise control, where if you want to modulate the throttle yourself, you can. And if you want to let the car do it, it also can.
Now, we mentioned the concept cars. Was there anything else in Detroit that really you thought was really, really intriguing?
I think... Again, I think the fact that the Camry has been completely redesigned is really coming into it now. And the Lexus LS500, again, cars that have been very traditional, but they're really redesigning those cars. The brand new Honda Odyssey, I think most families will like that. But, you know, I think you have to kind of separate, you know, what's the concept car for the future and what's really practical now. And I think in Detroit, it was a lot more of the practical cars that people could really latch on to.
Okay, and we will talk about more of those after the break. We're talking about cars here on No Limits with WFYI's car guru, Casey Williams, who's just back from the auto shows in Detroit. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about cars today on No Limits with WFYI's car guru, Casey Williams, who's just back from the Detroit auto shows. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Andrew has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Andrew writes, most car makers worldwide are not building anything exciting anymore. Boring vehicles for boring people is all I see. I don't want a car that is connected. I want to be connected to the driving experience. That's where the fun is. Fast convertibles and sports cars and maybe a few trucks are all we need. Great program. Thanks. Well, I think Andrew's got a point of view, but to simplify Andrew's point, there are a lot of people out there who are pushing back on this saying, you know, I don't want to be driven. I want to drive.
Yeah. And again, just like we said, you know, before the break, that the automakers really understand that. They're going to offer those features, automated features, but they're not going to take the driver out of it if you want to be the driver in it. And there will always be those pure sports cars. You know, the Fiat 124 is a new car that just came out. The Mazda Miata has always been fantastic. Corvettes, of course. The Dodge Viper is on its way out of production, but it's been a fantastic car. But there are always going to be those cars that are enjoyable to drive. And I think, again, even when they're connected, even when they'll have autonomous features someday in the future, they will still be a joy to drive. And, you know, you look at some of the electric cars that are out now. Very fast. You know, a lot of people used to say, yeah, you need a big V8 engine or a V12 engine to go fast. Well, now, you know, with a 3-cylinder engine, a turbocharger, and a hybrid powertrain, it's really, really quick. And on top of that, it's, you know, instant torque, instant acceleration. You know, it's like the difference between a piston engine and a turbojet engine. It's just very quick. So I think there's going to be those cars even in the future where people just thoroughly enjoy them.
So if you're a guy like Andrew, you really want to be connected to the driving experience, What cars would you recommend that are just plain fun to drive?
Corvettes are always fun to drive. Thoroughly enjoyable. Lots of horsepower. Designed for the driver. And again, I think the little sports cars. I think the Mazda Miata, it's a classic. Always fun. Just very light. You know, just a joy to drive on curvy two-lane roads. Top's easy to go back. Thoroughly enjoyable. The Fiat. Any of those little two-seat roadsters, you know, the Subaru BRZ is a car I've enjoyed very much. You know, Porsche. The little Porsches are fine. The 911, the Cayman, those are all great cars as well. The Boxster is especially fun.
We are talking about cars here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Ricky has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ricky, welcome to the program.
Hi. I guess he just answered all of my questions, really. I was going to say, where does the car enthusiast go in the realm of things now, but I think he answered all those questions when he mentioned all these different cars like the Corvette and whatnot. But, so I think he's really just answered my question.
Ricky, do you think he missed any on his list? Sounds like you're a car enthusiast.
What do you like,
well,
Ricky?
I own a 2010 Camaro SS right now, we have our ways, enthusiasts do. We have our ways of, you know, programming and changing parts and stuff still yet today. Some of the older guys haven't really caught on to all that stuff, but it's kind of nice. I don't really want the car driving for me, but being an enthusiast, but I guess it could have its nice points, too.
Thanks very much for the call, Ricky, and for sharing your enthusiasm for cars with us.
Yeah, I think,
all right, thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
I think Ricky made a good point. I think, you know, Camaro's a great choice. Talk about enthusiast cars. You know, the Camaro, the Mustang, the Dodge Challenger, you know, those are, you'd think they're kind of old school muscle cars, but they're really advanced. You can get a turbocharged four cylinders, or you can get the V8 engine, and they're a delightful car to drive today. And the other thing I always tell enthusiasts, you know, my 1989 Corvette had 240 horsepower, and at the time, probably a Lamborghini Countach and a Ferrari Testarossa would outrun it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the fastest cars you could buy in the world at the time. Well, today, you can buy a Camaro with a V6 engine that's got over 300 horsepower. Mm-hmm. You can buy a Mustang with over 300 horsepower. And these cars get 30 miles per gallon. So, you know, you can still have, you know, the very driver-focused cars and the muscle cars with some of the modern technology and some of the gadgets that come along with that.
Are people still, you know, and I should say here, I know just enough about cars to really get myself into trouble. It, basically, I know how to turn one on and I know how to drive it. And that's about it. But it, long ago when I worked for the Indianapolis Star and Indianapolis News, everybody had to go out and cover some portion of the races at one time or another. And yeah. One of the eye-openers for me out of that process was that I assumed that it was an awful lot like other sports where you followed the athlete, in this case the driver. And that was some case. But I ran into quite a number of people who said, oh, no, no. One guy I remember saying, I'm out here because I have a Ford preference, or, you know, I'm a big Chevy buff, or whatever. Are people still brand loyal, automaker loyal in that fashion?
Well, I think they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if you look at what IndyCar has done over the years, they've, you know, changed engine sponsors, they've changed chassis suppliers, and I think it makes it a little bit tougher. But I think there's still some of that old adage, you know, race on Sunday and sell on Monday, that if at the end of the day you're not selling more cars because of racing, then what's the point for, you know, Chevrolet and Ford and everybody else to be in racing? I mean, they're doing it because they hope there's some cachet along with that translates into car sales at some point.
Well, and it wasn't just the auto racing piece of it I was talking about. I mean, I had friends years ago that, you know, I mean, they would just buy, you know, if they started out buying Fords, they bought Fords all the way till the end of time. And they'd make fun of every other car manufacturer there was, have acronyms or whatever that belittled the product. Is there still that kind of customer loyalty, or is that broken a little bit?
I think there's less loyalty in that regard. Where I find that kind of loyalty is in pickup trucks and cars like the Camaro and the Mustang. If you're a Mustang guy, you're probably not ever going to buy a Camaro, and definitely in pickup trucks. It's, you know, I buy Ford pickup trucks and I buy one after another and would never even cross shop a Dodge or a Chevrolet.
So it's an enthusiast passion, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about cars here on No Limits. The number is 866-476-3881. Blake, welcome to the program.
Hi. Going back to automation and driverless cars, how are car companies addressing the potential legal liabilities of, you know, automated systems? Because, you know, they had that Google car that crashed into the bus not too long ago, and I was just wondering if we could discuss that a little bit.
Thanks very much for the call. It's a good question, Blake. Thanks.
Yeah, most of the automakers have said they're going to take that liability themselves. And the reason is, you know, if they didn't take that liability, nobody would ever do it because the insurance company sure don't want to insure them. But the other side of that, though, is that maybe insurance companies would, because, you know, what they're predicting now is that automated cars will save about 1.2 million deaths on the roads worldwide. And you think about those deaths, you know, 94% are caused by human error. And so the auto companies and the insurance companies, everybody combined, they really believe that when the system is all put together, that the autonomous cars will be a lot safer than human-driven cars.
Got a question from a listener on Facebook. And again, if you want to reach out to us via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits, WFYI. This listener writes, what features, pivoting seats, multiple screens for passengers, etc., does KCC becoming standard on cars in the next few years? What features do you want to see become standard?
I think the features that really, really affect people, again, are the crash avoidance systems. You know, it's the forward collision warning systems and mitigation systems that go ahead and automatically brake. It's the blind spot warning systems. It's the rear cross path detection that, you know, detect things behind you, and then it'll brake the car backing out. I actually had a Jeep Grand Cherokee this week, and I couldn't get it out of a parking spot because there was somebody staying back there. I couldn't see him, but the car saw him. And had I not, that system not been on the car, could have backed over him, you know, could have hurt them. So I think those systems that are coming on are just, they're fantastic and really have the potential to take, you know, take human death out of this to a large degree.
We're talking about cars here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. That's what Joan's done. Joan, welcome to the program.
Hi. I have a question. I listened to all of the high-performance cars you discussed, and I drive a Honda, which I like, but I'm in the market for a new car, and I want something that I can carry all four of my dogs in the back and get really good fuel efficiency. And I was wondering what you would suggest for someone like me.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Joan.
Hey, Joan, what kind of Hyundai do you have?
I have a Santa Fe.
Is it working for you now?
Yes, but I'm going to, my son is going to take that car and I'm getting a new one.
Yeah, I think the midsize crossovers is probably where you want to look, or compact crossovers even. The Honda CR-V is brand new, just came out. I'm a big fan of the Subaru Outback. I like it very much. You know, they just had the new 2018 Jeep Compass in the Los Angeles Auto Show. That's a vehicle that might work. It's a Fiat-based vehicle, so it's a little sportier handling, not as bouncy as some of the Jeeps have been in the past. Brand new Mazda CX-5 that's in that class. So I think any of those cars are kind of the midsize. Toyota RAV4 is probably good. And you get good gas mileage of those. You get low 30s, low to mid-30s, depending on the vehicle on the highway, and to probably have a space that you need.
And what do you think about electric cars?
I like electric cars, and I really like their potential. And I think that's something probably we're going to talk about quite a bit more here in a few minutes. But, you know, there's a standard that says that automakers have to hit 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025 as a fleet average for each automaker. And the only way they're going to get there is electrification. So I think electric cars are kind of their infancy. In fact, only 0.37% of cars sold last year were electric vehicles. But there's all variations of those. And a hybrid, you know, is electrified, but it's more gas. And a car I like a lot, and it might actually fit your need, the new Chrysler Pacifica plug-in hybrid will go 30 miles on electricity, and then it's got a gas engine that fires up and goes on from there. Nice thing about those is there's a $7,500 federal tax credit, so you can buy a comparably equipped vehicle with electrification cheaper than the gas version if you get the right trim on it.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, John. So we've got an email from a listener named Sean, and if you want to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sean writes, wants to know about what is the best wheelchair vehicle, and then says, for mileage too, and what's the best time of year to buy a car? Is anyone looking at putting GPS on cars, making all cars autonomous? And thanks, says he never misses a show.
Well, Sean, I think, and I know there's a lot of outfitters for handicap accessibility, and I'm not completely familiar with all of those. I do know that Chrysler in the past with the minivans has been really, really good about that. They don't do that themselves, but they do work very closely with outfitters to do that. So I'm assuming that Chrysler would be one of those. There's also a vehicle called the MV1 that's built by AMG up in Mishawaka, and that's a vehicle that might also work. They have a civilian version of that, and the vehicle is designed for taxi services and for handicapped people to be picked up from even like the city bus services. So those vehicles are designed for handicapped as well. It might be a good choice.
We are, and he asked also, what's the best time of year to buy a car?
Well, it seems like winter is usually a pretty good time because everybody's kind of done with Christmas, so all those purchases are over, and people aren't in the mood to go out yet because it's not springtime, it's not warm. So usually the pricing in the wintertime is better as an enticement. It seems like the incentives and the better deals are in the wintertime.
We're talking cars here on No Limits. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you. As a septuagenarian, I'm amazed I can drive and talk to you at the same time. My question is, when I was growing up, cars were so heavy, but they were so wide and so long in a collision, it was very rare to see a car on its side or upside down. And even with the crossovers, it seems like that's become fairly common. And I read the other day that, the statistics on that kind of verify that. Are manufacturers addressing that?
They are, and they're doing that in two ways. One are, you know, the stability control systems and roll mitigation systems that electronically will brake and accelerate wheels trying to keep the car under control. The other thing has been a big push to crossovers versus SUVs. The crossovers are lighter. The weight, it's got a little better weight balance. So that's another reason they're pushing crossovers as well.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Joe.
Thank you.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Robert, and you can find us on Twitter at WFYI. Robert writes, with increased safety of self-driving cars, won't humans driving be an unacceptable hazard, maybe even immoral? Is this going to create new ethical challenges for us, in other words?
I guess it will. And I guess that case could come at some point. It's hard to predict the future, right? But yeah, I mean, sure. I think the one thing right now that everybody's really sure about, the automakers are saying this, and even the government's saying this, is they're not going to try to take away your classic car. They're not going to take it off the road. They're looking for ways to have them involved. But who knows? 100 years from now, you know, you could make that ethical argument probably. And especially as all the cars are automated, you probably don't want to. Human-driven car on the road messing everything up.
Well, I would think part of the problem, part of the point of having self-driving and automated cars
safety.
is that you eliminate variables, particularly
right.
If they're all talking to each other. That makes it a lot easier for us to avoid accidents and really to avoid chance or mishap. And that's really, I think, what Robert's getting at is, why would you then want to introduce a variable into that system?
You wouldn't want to, and I think we should talk about this more in just a second. But you know, the next thing that's going to happen is vehicle-to-vehicle communications and vehicle-to-infrastructure communications, and talking. You know, they're going to have by 2023 is what's been proposed right now, that all vehicles would have to be able to communicate with each other. But and on top of that, you say, well, what if I've got a 1963 Corvette or if I've got a Model T Ford I like driving? Well, you can put a beacon, you know, theoretically on the car that says, here I am, I'm not guided, no, I'm here. And the other cars around it would communicate with and know that it's kind of there and it's moving on its path. So there's ways to do it. But that's really the next step, too, is the cars having control systems. But when you really get the safety is when cars speak to each other. And you think about driving over, you know, an arch bridge with, you know, the blind stop at the other end of it. Well, the cars can talk to each other. So the car knows, hey, I need to stop because there's a car stopped right on the other side of that bridge. Or I'm coming around a corner, there's a car stopped for a hazard. So when that starts happening, then the car is really, you know, it takes a lot of the variables out of it too.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions about this sort of explosion of technology in regard to driving. I remember we did a show here where actually one of the guests was arguing put a halt to public transit systems because these driverless cars are going to be here and they can just solve the problem for us. Are we likely to see, you know, this becoming the way that people travel, say within the next decade?
Well, I think you're going to have the same issues as today, right? Some people can afford their own cars. Some people won't be able to afford their own cars in the future. And they're not likely to get much cheaper given all the technology that's going into them. So I think people are going to have their own cars. Americans want their own cars. So that's going to continue. And I don't think it's going to eliminate public transportation. I think you'll have the same kind of dual systems you have today, but you'll just have, you know, more advanced versions of them.
We are talking about cars here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guest is WFYI's car guy, Casey Williams. Casey's just back from Detroit where he's seen everything that's new and hot. We may talk a little bit about what's not, too, when we come back. We're talking about cars here on No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about cars today here on No Limits with WFYI's car guru, Casey Williams. And I should say, even though we've got an hour here, it's clear from the volume of calls, emails, and all of that, we're not going to be able to get to everyone's question answered. If you want to see more of Casey's reporting on the automotive world, you can go to WFYI.org/auto. And you generally post, Casey, the new videos, what, Wednesdays and Fridays, did you say?
Yeah, we normally have industry news, some auto show stuff on Wednesdays, and then Fridays it's a review with a full video. And listeners can also email me at autocasey@AOL.com.
autocasey@AOL.com. So, we're talking cars here. George, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Certainly.
Just looking back from back when Disneyland opened up, and they had a people mover. It shares one engine for a lot of vehicles. Is that where automated cars will end up someday, where we're not each driving a car with an engine in it? We're sharing a common railgun method or vacuum tube or something to get us all through to efficiently maybe move the world around?
Good question. Thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's hard to predict what advanced technology is going to come in the next century or so. One of the things I always kind of joke about, though, is that, back in the Disneyland days, and you look at some of the General Motors and Ford concepts from the 1950s, they talked about atomic vehicles. And at the time, they were talking about having a reactor on board the car, which, I think all of us would be kind of horrified about today. But we're going to be driving a lot of atomic-powered vehicles. They're just going to have a remote reactor powering electric cars. And I think that's really where we're going. We're going to electric cars. And as batteries become more robust, and you can have more energy in a smaller battery, you're going to be able to drive long distances. You have Tesla, at over 300 miles. You have new cars that are coming in the 300 to 400 mile electric range. Being able to recharge those cars a lot quicker, be able to get them done in 10, 15 minutes, and it becomes very competitive with gas. And the prices are coming down. You have the new Chevy Bolt electric car that I'm actually going to California to drive next week. But that car has a 238-mile all-electric range. And with the federal tax credit, you're under $30,000 in that car. So that's a lot of bang for the buck. And when Tesla's Model 3 comes out, it'll be a similar range, similar price. So that's kind of where the sweet spot is right now. It's the sub-$30,000 and, 240 miles or so range.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Katie. And if you want to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Katie writes, it seems with the coming of self-driving car technology that the next wave of competition, and then she puts in parentheses, and job loss for traditional car companies will come at the hands of software companies. They are selling moving software, not a car with certain software. Is there investment by car companies to adapt and keep from becoming obsolete once self-driving technology becomes more widely available, used, accepted, etc.?
Yeah, Google and Apple, I think, are the two you think about that I think they had in their minds to get into the auto industry and really build cars. And I think they had a Silicon Valley mindset of, hey, we can do this better, and the guys in Detroit are stupid. And I think they, and Tesla's kind of, I think, learned this lesson too, that they've learned how capital intensive it is to be in the auto market and to build and to have physical plants building products and the tooling that goes into this and the engineering that goes into this. It's an incredibly complicated thing to build an automobile. And I think the software guys are kind of realizing that maybe they ought to be in the software market partnering with the automakers. And you've got Google's Waymo, it's their autonomous vehicle arm, working with Chrysler to outfit minivans, and they're experimenting. You've got Ford doing the same thing with software developers. So I think you're going to see more of a close partnership between the automakers and software developers. And all the major automakers have R&D centers in Silicon Valley now. In fact, that's where I'm going to drive the Chevy Bolt. It'll be out in Silicon Valley. So I think you'll see them partnering more than software makers getting the car business.
David, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I was looking to see, I'll be purchasing a car, and safety is a big point. Is there a safe car if in an accident? Is there a safer car than most or a safer brand than most? Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, David.
I think the difference in safety between the car manufacturers today is a lot closer than it's ever been. But I still think Volvo, I think, always comes out on top. They just focus on it. They really mean it. And you almost never, ever, ever have a Volvo, having a crash test failure or anything. But and it's something that's just inherent in their DNA. I mean, they invented the three-point seatbelt in passenger cars, and they've been there with the development of airbags and crash structures and everything else all along. So I think Volvo's usually top of my list. But my caveat is that, you know, you could go buy a Subaru, Mercedes, or a Chevrolet today and be, you know, fairly close to the Volvo in terms of safety, too.
Gotten an email from a listener named Sandra. Sandra writes, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Sandra writes, I've seen some negative reviews of the Honda HR-V. I currently drive a Fit and love it, but I'm thinking about the HR-V. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I like the car, actually. I've actually recommended Fits to people, and I've driven the HR-V, you know, long distances on the highway and around town. I think, you know, it's a little bit small. It's a little bit noisy on the highway. It's got a continuously variable transmission that can buzz a little bit. But those are all the things that you're used to with the Fit anyway. So if you like your Fit, I think you'd like the HR-V. And in fact, I actually recommend an HR-V to one of my relatives. So it's a car I like personally.
So, but that sets up because the premise of the question was sort of, okay, I've read negative reviews. What were the things that weren't hot up in Detroit? Yeah. We've talked about all the cool stuff. What's the stuff that's not so cool?
Well, I think, you know, you look at the automakers that are continually a struggle. I think I'd go there first. You know, Mitsubishi, they announced that the Lancer is going away. It's getting dated. I think some of the automakers are struggling. I think the ones that have cars are very good cars, but I think some of the automakers are struggling. I think Mitsubishi will probably is struggling the most of them right now. I was trying to think what I don't like. You know, and again, the cars have just come along so far that it's not like in the old days where you say, you know, one brand is really bad and one brand's really good. I think they're very, very close in terms of quality and performance.
We're talking cars here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Welcome to the program.
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. What's on your mind?
Okay. I am a Luddite as compared to all of these technical wizards that are making cars these days. I'm still driving my Acura Integra from the old days, and I am wondering, a two-parter, have car companies fundamentally basically disavowed the manual transmission? And then the second part is, are there technical reasons why manual transmission cannot be offered in hybrid vehicles or electric vehicles?
Thanks very much for the call and the question.
Manual transmissions could be offered in hybrid cars. If you remember the Honda Insight, it had a manual transmission when it first came out, an early hybrid. They had a Honda Accord hybrid for the manual transmission. But it really just comes down to demand. People just simply don't want them in terms of demand. So the automakers are making, you know, development decisions on, do I include this? Do I develop a transmission, go with this car? Are we going to build this transmission? Are we going to tool up for this transmission? And the manuals just, you know, lose out. However, there is, you know, a bit of a spark. You know, the Honda Civic is one that we've kept a manual. They have a new five-door hatchback that's coming out this year, just came out, in fact. It has a manual. I know the Subaru Impreza hatchback has a manual. So there are some mainstream cars that have manuals, and they have customer bases that really like the manual. So it's a mix, but generally people just don't drive them anymore.
Well, and this gets to, and I get that question, because for a long time I absolutely refused to drive anything but a stick.
Yeah.
And it diminished the driving pleasure for me. I do wonder, because our cars also, you know, I mean, I can hear you when you talk about the cars you own right now.
Yeah.
And how your voice changes when you're talking about one car or another. In addition to being something that gets us from place to place, our car purchases generally also say something about who we are and what we value as well. If we're moving into this brave new world where it really does just become a way for you to get from one point to the other, is that sense of personal identification with your vehicle going to diminish, do you think?
No, because I think the same kind of branding that goes on with that will continue. I mean, you know, a Porsche is still going to be a Porsche, and a Ferrari is going to be a Ferrari, and a Corvette is going to be a Corvette. And I think those still go along with it. But cars do, you know, cars are identifiers for us, you know, as people. And it says, you know, what our values are, and you're right. And I think people choose to buy cars that express their personality, and they choose to do business with car companies that they agree with, you know, with them. And sometimes politically, you know, if it's a company that invests heavily in outdoors equipment and outdoor sports, they tend to identify with that. And part of it's fancy marketing, but part of it really is people just identify the brand.
Got an email from a listener named James. James writes, it is so common for people to drive their vehicles in disrepair. It's why so many states have smog testing. If we're going to put our lives in the hands of automated driving, when will state-mandated testing of vehicles follow?
Well, it's a good question. I wish I could answer that one. But you do make a really good point. And again, if you travel to Europe, you know, there are much tighter mandates for those cars. You know, and they have to do the annual testing, and smog testing is very strict. And we do tend to be a bit lax about that here in the U.S. And I think especially as cars become automated and, you know, people aren't feeling and touching them and sensing all the things that are going on with the car, that I think that's a lot more important. I totally agree.
Got a question from a listener named Jason via Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Jason writes, let's talk Jeep Wrangler, the Jeep life.
Sure. Brand new Jeep Wrangler on the way. They didn't announce. I mean, they've announced a while ago they're going to build the vehicle, and they didn't show it. But we're thinking 2018 is what we're looking at for the new Jeep. Supposed to be lighter, a little better gas mileage. I think they're going to slant the windshield back just a little bit for a little better gas mileage as well. Great vehicle, and there's going to be a pickup version of it the next time around too. And they've said it's going to be built in Toledo, Ohio. So I think the Jeep fans are going to be very, very happy with that vehicle when it comes out.
Got another email from a listener named Leslie. Our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. She says, a recent Consumer Reports indicated recently manufactured Subarus aren't as good quality as previously manufactured ones. Your comments?
I think Consumer Reports is a data point when you're looking for a new automobile. The thing, and I think they do a very good job of really doing those reviews. The thing that I differ with a little bit with them is that, you know, the defects are defects, and there's a big difference between a defect that's, you know, a squeaky door compared to a transmission failure. And I think that there's not as much differentiation in those different defects as I think they should. But it's a data point. It's something that's important. But again, I'll just tell you, I just bought a new Subaru, and the Consumer Reports had no bearing whatsoever on my decision.
Jack, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
You spoke earlier about smart cars and vehicle-to-vehicle communication and vehicle-to-infrastructure communication, how that's going to become potentially a big thing. My question is, what happens if there are people with harmful or ulterior motives that are able to get into those lines of communication? Because you're not going to have one manufacturer controlling that communication, and you'll have to have a Ford and a Subaru and a Chrysler just talk to each other on the road, and somebody should fairly easily be able to get into that line and maybe command it to do something that, the driver really doesn't want to do.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jack.
Yeah, that's a big concern. I think it was Chrysler that was actually paying hackers to try to get into their cars already. And even today, when you have, you know, radar-guided cruise control systems and electronic throttles and those systems on cars, even today, you know, there's a potential for those cars being hacked. It's not widespread, and in fact, I don't think anybody's even got a case of it actually happening. But there is a fear that the automakers are staying ahead of that. And the vehicle-to-vehicle communications, you know, the federal government, NHTSA, is really working on that protocol with the automakers to make sure those are safe. But I think that's probably a big concern of the automakers as well, to make sure those cars are safe.
Got an email from a listener named John. Our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. John says that we have forgotten about the Indiana domestic models and asks, how about a rundown of which Honda, Subaru, and Toyota models are built in Indiana?
Vehicles built in Indiana today, Subaru Outback, Subaru Legacy, the Impreza was just moved to Indiana. The Crosstrek, I think, is maybe not quite here yet, but coming. It's also going to be built in Indiana. Pickup trucks, you have GMC Sierra and Chevy Silverado up in Fort Wayne. Of course, the Subarus are built in Lafayette. Toyota builds here. The minivans build here. They've got the Sequoia SUV and the Highlander, I believe, are still built here. They're down in Princeton, Indiana. And then Civic CRV in Greensburg. And then also the Mercedes R-Class wagon is built up in Mishawaka for export. They don't sell that in the United States, but it's a vehicle that's built up there for export.
We're talking cars here on No Limits. Don, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Back in the 50s, there was a magazine article talking about driverless cars, and they would embed a telephone or a radio wire in the highway. And then you would log in, or type in your destination, and the car would follow that wire to its destination. I was wondering if that concept had been thought about.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Don.
Yeah, I don't think they're going there. I think because of the cost to the infrastructure and to embed all that, you know, nationwide would be really, really costly. And I don't think they need to with cameras and radar and LIDAR and different technologies today. I mean, GPS especially is, you know, prevalent today, that I don't think it's necessary. And if there weren't other cars on the highway, you know, a car driving from point A to point B and staying in its lane and doing that safely, is you know, they can do that today. The complexity becomes other cars moving in and out and pedestrians and bicycles and all these unpredictable things.
We've got just a little bit of time, but one of the things is we've been talking about this that has been rattling around in my head. We've done a lot of shows here and had a lot of discussions in the community about how millennials view a lot of these questions differently than previous generations, that they want walkable cities, they want public transportation. How is that desire going to change the car culture, do you think?
Well, I think that's been a big question. Would millennials kind of rebuff cars and not have them? And I think there are some millennials who are living, you know, in urban centers that are not. But as we're finding, as those millennials get older and they have kids and, you know, have demands of owning a home and needing to haul stuff around, they're buying cars. You can't go get stuff at the home store for your house and get a home on a bus very easily. So the demand for which types of cars they drive may be different, but there's still going to be demand.
So your video, you do auto industry news every Wednesday?
Yeah.
And then video reviews on Fridays, right?
Yeah, videos are posted on Friday, and a new car every single week, and it's a wide variety, so everything from a Hyundai 1 week to a high-end Mercedes the next week, and hopefully a little bit of something for everybody and different models, different price points.
So I'm not going to ask what you said about it, but what's going up tomorrow?
I think we have the Honda Accord Hybrid going up tomorrow.
The Honda Accord Hybrid?
I think so. We're always a week or two delayed, and
okay.
I think it's just going up.
Well, I'd like to thank you for being here, Casey.
Thanks,
and
John.
Clearly the volume of questions we got, we'd love to have you come back at some point. Really enjoyed talking with you. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.